Hey, it's Dan Bader, and this is Yes My Podcast. For the last couple of weeks, music teacher Katie Fernecki has been emailing me videos of one of her students. His name is Ryder, and he's a second grader at E.W. Luther Elementary School. I went over to the school and met Ryder for a video series called Why I Love, a series highlighting topics students are really into. It launched the idea of this podcast. Take a listen, and I'll explain more.
This is the bass drum.
Yep.
This is the floor drum. And this is the hi-hats. This is a crash cymbal. All of these are crash cymbals. And I start playing drums at three.
Three? And how do you start even to begin to learn to play the drums?
Well, I learned off my dad because he owns like probably like five drum sets.
Yeah.
And he was in a band for a couple years, like playing like stuff that's kind of loud, and I like music, so it's like a great combo together.
It turns out that Ryder can also play the piano, bass guitar, and harmonica. I wanted to learn more about how Ryder was introduced to music, so I asked his dad, Ben, to come on the podcast. So, Ben, how did you get Ryder into playing drums? My kids are into music a little bit. We have a piano, and I've done lessons, but they don't have the passion that Ryder seems to have for it.
I think it was just having him exposed to it in many different ways, whether it was just a pencil sitting on a table or something and start tapping, and next thing you know, he learned time.
Yeah. And he does. So I saw him playing drums, but he plays other instruments too, right?
Yeah. You play guitar, bass, piano, drums, like pretty dialed in.
Yeah, and the video you shared with me, it looks like you kind of have a practice space at home that you guys...
Yeah, I got a full studio in the basement.
Oh my gosh, awesome. How did you introduce him to it in the beginning? Like, I got the time, you know, but like, did you guys just jam together? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I have early recordings of him like being like 3 years old, and it was pretty amazing. I just knew he had it, you know. There's a pulse that you just have. And that's how it goes, I guess.
Yeah, he just grabbed into it. Is he impressive to you? Because he's blowing us
away. Blows my mind every day. Whether he's playing his harmonica or playing his piano. I'm like, where did you come up with that? He said, I don't know, I just did. I think he's pretty shy with the school, you know, like having his drums in the school to like really let himself go. I think he's a little nervous, shy.
Any thoughts about just Mrs. Fernecki seems to have embraced his musicality and integrated in the classrooms. Did you guys know she was doing that?
Well, he always bugged me about it. He'd be like, Dad, I want to bring my guitar to school. And I'm like, well, hit your teacher up, see what she says, you know? And he came out of school one day, and he's like, Dad, I need to bring my drums. I was like, what? I was expecting this. He had this conversation when he was probably like, I don't know, maybe fifth or sixth grade or something. I mean, I didn't think I was going to be roadieing for my kid when he's in second grade.
That's right. I guess you are the roadie, right? Yeah.
The magic of watching them two play together for the first time was pretty exciting for me.
Awesome. Yeah. He looked right at her when she countered him down, you know. And they know how to play together now. They've been practicing.
It's fun to watch. The dynamic is pretty awesome.
Meeting Ryder and his dad got me to thinking and wondering about how the School District of South Milwaukee introduces students to musical instruments. Ryder is a really interesting outlier, and I can't wait to hear what he does with his future. But it takes the rest of us years of patient instruction and practice to become musicians. I'm sure Ryder has a lot of practice in front of him, too. Here in South Milwaukee, that all starts in elementary school. Hey, so I am at Lakeview Elementary School. I'm here with Mandy Tinson, the music teacher for Lakeview and Luther. Mandy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So tell me how we introduce instruments to students at elementary level.
Yeah, so starting really right away in kindergarten, kids are introduced to non-pitched percussion instruments in the classroom. So we're talking about things like maracas, tambourines, drums, cymbals, those sorts of things. And we really focus with playing them to the steady beat or really simple rhythms, starting right away in kindergarten. And then in third grade, we do a big unit about the instruments and the orchestra. So that's really when we start to talk more about woodwind and string instruments and the brass family, which kids generally don't have a lot of exposure to until they get to middle school. So starting in third grade, we do a unit in the classroom about it, but then we also have middle school ensemble students visit the elementary school. So we recently had eighth graders at all the elementary schools showing the kids what it's like to be part of the band, orchestra, or choir program here. And then in fifth grade, they make the decision about what they want to play when they go to sixth grade.
And what are some of the fundamentals to an instrument that you teach early on?
It's always a lot about care, so how we take care of the instruments well, how we hold them. There's a lot of conversation about how to produce an instrument's best sound. So the claves, for example, which to most kids just look like rhythm sticks to start with, have to be held a certain way to create vibration appropriately to create their actual authentic sound. So there's some technique involved in as well. And then when we do our recorder units in fourth and fifth grade, then we're talking about breath technique, fingering techniques on an instrument that's more flute-like.
And I know that students are still developing, in gym class, right, we work on coordination and motor skills, and this is large and motor skills, I imagine, and then mathematically it's kind of a beat, keeping a beat, and how deep do you get into that?
Yeah, it's all of those things. So certainly there's a level of hand-eye coordination required so that kids can watch music while moving their fingers or playing the drums or whatever it is. There's also a lot of music theory involved as kids age. So we're expecting them then to be able to read the rhythm written on a staff and produce what's actually written there, like real musicians do. Hmm. So starting in kindergarten, we use that mostly with cymbals, non-traditional music cymbals. And then as they grow, we get more to what people are familiar with, like eighth notes, quarter notes, rests, those sorts of things.
And how do you do that with the group of 20 students? Because there are 20 instruments here, but I don't imagine they all go together all the time.
Right. Well, for my own sake, we don't generally put all of them together at one time. But we do often have up to three different rhythms playing at a time. So if we were in a drumming circle, for example, there would be a group of students responsible just for the steady beat, and there would be a group of students responsible for one rhythm, and then another group for a second rhythm, so that we're really building an ensemble feel. And in that case, we may have up to three different types of instruments going.
I'm big on this because I did it for my son, but can you talk a little bit about the relationship between how paying attention in math will help you in music and paying attention to music and using your hands will help you in math?
Sure. I think for me at the elementary level, the biggest concept there is fractions. And we really work at understanding in the music room how to divide measures into quarters, fourths, into eighths, into sixteenths. And then also adding that up, like when you have a whole note, that's four fourths of a measure. So time signatures come into play there. And then hopefully kids take that knowledge back to math as well. And we sort of are able to, you know, collaborate and bring both ideas and processes together.
Thank you for having the time. All right, we're going to sing a pretty song since the kindergartners were singing upbeat rock and roll. We're going to sing a slow one.
All right.
Okay, are you? You tell us when you're ready, Mr. Bader.
Go ahead.
All right.
So when a student comes to the middle school and shows some interest in wanting to play an instrument, how do they get engaged in the music program here?
Yeah, so obviously in South Milwaukee, the orchestra program starts in sixth grade, and my philosophy in teaching is building relationships and connections with students so that when they come into my classroom, they're excited about learning music. I am not expecting to build the next Beethoven, but I want students to come in feeling engaged, excited, and creative in playing their string instruments.
That's Tyler Stepp, the middle school orchestra director. He, along with Zachary Hamilton, the band director, and Kathleen Miller, the choir director, take students from the elementary schools and further develop their skills. And that's that was gonna be my next question. Is there like a survey class of instruments? How are they introduced to it in the first place?
Yeah, so students are first introduced to the string instruments. We take our eighth graders each year on a tour to the elementary schools that showcases all band, choir, and orchestra classes from eighth grade to the elementary. And then we ask our elementary colleagues to interview students, basically ask them what instruments they're interested in or if they're interested in continuing singing in choir. So that way, by the time like May rolls around, we have an instrument petting zoo where students can come in and try instruments and determine if they want to take orchestra or band.
Nice. And then I know you do the stringed instruments, but I guess it's the same with brass and woodwinds, right? That's how they get into, if that's where they're at, they end up with Mr. Hamilton, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like that instrument petting zoo we do on the same night. So let's say a student's first interest is violin. They try it out. They don't like it. They can pop over to the band room and try out a brass or woodwind instrument.
And then kind of get into the music. What's the progression in middle school from zero when they get here to what do they leave knowing?
Right. So obviously, like I said, we start in sixth grade for string instruments. So I can only speak for orchestra, but like these kids come in and don't know how to even hold an instrument, right? So sixth grade, we spend a lot of time focusing on posture, how to hold our instrument, how to play with a bow, how to play without a bow. By the time they're done with eighth grade, multiple students leave my classroom knowing how to shift up and down their instrument, use a technique called vibrato, and develop some really advanced skills that are expected when you go into high school.
And how about reading sheet music? Do kids come to you not knowing that either?
Oh, absolutely. Elementary school, right, they spend a lot of time learning by rote and learning how to sing just based off of a piano. I mean, they do spend some time reading sheet music, but for an instrument for, say, like viola, right, viola doesn't read your basic treble clef or bass clef. They read a clef called alto clef. So these kids, like viola players, come in not knowing anything about reading music. So by the time they leave eighth grade, they have become proficient enough where they can read a piece of sheet music.
Mm-hmm. those two examples were from the middle school music tour at Rawson Elementary last year, and you can hear how excited the elementary kids are to see bigger kids playing music. Next up is David Shaw. He's the orchestra director and head of the music department at South Milwaukee High School. So David Shaw, how when students come to you, hopefully they've had 2 or 3 years of music at the middle school level. Where do you take them after that?
Yeah, like you said, hopefully they have a couple of years under their belts. In the middle school, I mean, I'm really hoping for when they get to me that they have a lot of the physical parts of it worked out. You know, the holding, the putting together, all kind of the logistical issues of playing the instruments are kind of, if not figured out, they're on their way, right? And then when they do get to high school, it's really a matter of seeing where they're at and just taking them to whatever the next level is. And that the challenging part I think about that in high school is you have this widespread of skill levels of kids who are in MISO, and they've been in MISO, which is Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra, for 4 or 5 years already. And then you have kids who are on the other end where they maybe joined late, or they had to come in and out, or they missed a year and they are just not practicing as much as they could or should, stuff like that. So getting all those into one class and really making sure that we are meeting everyone's needs, but also pushing everybody at the same time. But that is really where we take it in high school. It goes past the logistical idea of playing. We used to do a joke demonstration at one of my previous schools where we would have a kid on stage holding a chair, like hugging a chair, and like coaching the kid to say, okay, now, breathe in deeper and exhale faster. Nope, you're not pushing down the right leg. Trying to get across how complicated it is to do all of these physical, mental, and emotional actions to make music come out of an object, right? And that's the goal in high school, is to get music to come out. It's no longer pushing the right button at the right time or putting the right finger down. It's to get something out of the instrument that resembles the human voice, because that's what every instrument is trying to mimic. They're trying to mimic the human voice. When you hear a singer, an opera singer, singing with vibrato, which is kind of the waver in the sound, they're phrasing, they're getting louder, getting softer when they breathe. That is all we're trying to copy that. Whenever we do instrumental performance, we're trying to make sure the pause would make sense, like in a conversation like we're having right now, where I took a breath there between that sentence. And that same thing applies. So making that leap in high school from this is how this thing operates to now I'm getting into the nuance of how to really make something that can have the potential to impact somebody emotionally. And I always say to my students, it's, you know, the reason you perform is because there's always the potential for that magic moment, whether it's, you know, whether you're getting chills as a performer or whether you are just understanding that you got a reaction of some sort. That is kind of that magic moment is what we're going for. And the closer we can get to that nuance, to that really fine, high level, close to professional sound and performance, the more successful I think we're looked at, and the more successful I think our students are.
Oh, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought that deeply about it, I'm sure. When students come to you, are they pretty set on the instrument that they're going to play, or do they have some chance to switch it up?
You know, I think that's another great aspect of high school music, is that students start to realize that maybe the skills that they've developed on an instrument are now transferable to another one. Maybe they can add to what they play. So if they come in playing clarinet and I show them how to start playing saxophone, you know, some of the things are the same. The reed on the clarinet and the saxophone are very similar. The mouthpiece is very similar, but the fingerings are different. Or in the case of some brass instruments, the fingerings are exactly the same, but the notes look different on the page, or the mouthpiece is a little bit different size. So there's all these transferable skills. I mean, I started on piano at a very young age. And then when I got to middle school, I added baritone. And then when I got to eighth grade, I added trombone. And then in college, I added tuba and and trumpet and all this other stuff, because those skills become transferable, especially I think if you have piano background. Hmm. But even in, you know, in orchestra, those same skills you use for playing violin are used for playing viola, and the general techniques for playing bass and cello are the same. It's just the spacing is a little different. And, you know, I say all these things like it's really easy to switch instruments and add things. There is a lot of work and time involved in making sure, you know, you sound like a clarinet player, or sound like a saxophone player, or you sound like a viola player, and no one goes, oh, you must have been playing cello for 5 years and now you're trying viola. But that the leap is much, much smaller when you've amassed some of these skills that you have over the years, to be able to add or change instruments. And then there's always the unicorn percussionist who, no matter how much they know and how many instruments they know, there's some they don't, and they have to keep adding and transferring and adding and transferring.
And talk to me about outlets for, you know, so I know kids have lessons with you and but tell me about the concerts through the year and ways kids can actually use the skills that they're developing.
Yeah. Well, I think those big summative experiences, you can call them, they're just big concerts. They're what you're working so hard and so long for. We do, at least a concert every quarter. And that's, you know, that can seem like not many, or it can seem like a lot. And that's kind of depending on how we pick the music. And in this second semester, the students picked all the music. So that was really cool to see them invested in their selections. And some of them were even campaigning, trying to get other kids to vote for the ones that they wanted. So that was really cool. But the performances are, you know, they're the reason for all this stuff. There was a concert we had in December at UW Parkside, where one of the director there, Dr. Kinchin, had a great quote that I'm going to steal always and forever. I'll still credit him, but I'll always steal it. He said, you know, the audience closes the loop. We do all this stuff. We practice by ourselves in practice rooms. We meet together to work on stuff we can only do as a group, but it all is meaningless until we perform it for people. And that completes the performance cycle, that outlet of, like I was saying before, that magical moment that it requires an audience. Hmm. I don't think I've ever gotten chills playing by myself in a practice room, but I have playing for people. Hmm. So it's those big opportunities for performance that are what we strive for and what we're shooting for. And like I said, they happen once per quarter, sometimes more frequently. Like we have this is just a big 2 month session for us. We had our big showcase concert at the beginning of the month. We have the musical coming up here in a couple of days. Then we have solo and ensemble and jazz and more and state solo and ensemble all before the end of April. Wow. So a lot of opportunities, but at the same time, it's, you know, there's been a lot of work. People have been working on this stuff since, you know, October, November, trying to get these in good shape.
Sure. And the musical is that extracurricular? Is that part of the course or?
No, that's extra. But there are students playing in the pit. There are students clearly, singing on stage and acting and dancing. But specifically with the instrumentalists in the pit, it's a hard show. I was just talking to another teacher today about how, I mean, I've been playing my instruments now for, I'll just leave it at 30 plus years. And I'm challenged. So I know that someone who's been playing for 5, 6, 7, is getting a workout down there. Mm. But yeah, that's an extra thing. The students volunteer to do that. It's a lot of extra time and a lot of, extra work, but I know just seeing them grow throughout this process, being able to make it through the show. First of all, I mean, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes of playing nonstop pretty much. So wow. It's a long time. It's very physically demanding, but I would say for this particular show, it's very, it's mentally draining. There's a lot of changes, a lot of cues, a lot of things to keep straight, which is why I keep going back to that example I gave of, having the kid hug the chair and, you know, press one leg. And it's just all these things up in the air. You're trying to juggle at once.
Yeah. 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 And I guess in the fall, summer and fall, you do band too, right? Marching band. So there's that also. Not for your string instruments, I guess, but.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, string instruments, they get, I've started to do earlier than with the band students. The chamber orchestra is doing something at Solon Ensemble as a group. So things will come. But I think for band, yeah, they really have to hit the ground running in the beginning of the school year. We have a short band camp before school starts. And then usually we have a game before school starts, a football game. And then we have another game like for the first or second week of school. So it really picks up, quickly. We're also started this year, a jazz combo. It'll be our first entry in a long time, I think, at this school into the jazz genre. So rather than what has happened the last couple years where I've mentioned starting a jazz program and I get lots of vocal interest, but then no one commits. I went and found specific students that I thought might be interested. And wouldn't you know it, they all were in when I explained and showed them the vision and kind of played some of the music for them. They really committed, and it's going to be cool. Their first official public performance will be at that Jazz and More event on April 16th, but they've already played a little bit in preparation for that. They played a little bit before the showcase earlier in March. But I also want to talk a little bit about some of the opportunities that kids have that they can participate in the Milwaukee area. There are a lot of youth groups. I was in, you know, way back when I was in some of these youth groups, I was in MISO as a student, and I was also as a director. I directed one of the groups. There's also another, and MISO, for those that don't know, has two full symphony orchestras. So that's brass, woodwinds, percussion, strings. And then they also have a lot, I think it's like six string orchestras, and they have a lot of other more, I think, specific. They have a calypso program, steel drum stuff. This really wide ranging, and they're expanding and growing. There's also another youth group out of University of Wisconsin Milwaukee called UA that does it's basically a select band program. There's honors bands. There's a lot of opportunities if kids want the additional experience, if they want to be pushed, if they want to be in a room with other kids that love music and all they want to do is play. There's opportunities for them outside of school as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like someone can come in as a freshman with pretty, you know, basic skill sets, and for the amount that they actually want to, could probably walk out into a music program at a college. It's kind of sounds like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. So any last thoughts? Anything I didn't ask you about that maybe you wanted to talk about?
I think just the most important, I think, unfortunately, it's becoming unique as well. But the most important aspect about the high school program, and this applies to choir too, is the lessons. You don't have a group of high school students that progresses as much as they do here or will be as good as they are here unless you have lessons. And there are schools that have a population that, you know, I student taught at Brookfield Central, the band department at Brookfield Central. And when I did that, the top band there, you couldn't be in it unless you were taking private lessons. So that to me is unrealistic. I don't think that should be the expectation unless the school is also willing to help provide those. And that's the really cool thing about South Milwaukee is that the school has said, we will do that. We will provide private lessons through the class. So every student here gets a one-on-one lesson with me every 2 or 3 weeks, depending on how big the class is. And it's not a weekly private lesson with a person from Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, but it is private, individualized, specific instruction for that student and their skill set that really helps them progress. And really, what I think is the most important part about the experience is it gives them confidence that what they're doing is on the right track, and they become more involved and they feel like they belong as part of that group because they know exactly, I guess, what would I expect from them, but that they're doing what the group is doing. And I just want to really make sure that is part of something, that's part of the program that I think is so unique. And one of the reasons why I think we're able to do a lot of cool things here, is that we are afforded that extra time to do private lessons with every student.
That's our episode for today. A big thank you to Mrs. Fernecki for her work with Ryder and suggesting I meet him, and to Ryder's dad, Ben, for taking some time of his day off to talk about Ryder's love of music. Thanks also to Mandy Tinson and Tyler Stepp. I literally walked into their classrooms with a voice recorder and asked to speak to them, and they graciously accommodated me. And finally to David Shaw, who agreed to an online interview to accommodate my schedule. As you mentioned, Jazz and More, a fundraising gala, is on April 16th at 5 p.m., organized by the South Milwaukee Music Parents Association and sponsored by the Musayers Club. The tickets are $75 per plate, and you get 3 hours of music, hors d'oeuvres, and a seated dinner. 3 hours of music from our students. If you missed it, there's a short recap of the really groundbreaking Music to Move Us Forward choir concert that was held on February 29th on our website. That celebration of the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act was moving and inspiring. The clip doesn't do it justice, but while we focused on instrumental musicians today, you can get an idea of how much work our choir students and directors put into that concert. Finally, don't forget to vote on April 2nd. The school board has put a referendum question on the ballot asking residents whether or not to inject $2 million into our schools for the next 5 years. The referendum promises to upgrade safety and technology, help us recruit and retain teachers and staff, and build career exploration pathways, kind of like we just heard from music, that introduces students to careers in computer science and knits together all the opportunities to build on those skills from kindergarten to graduation. Learn more about it and the school tax implications for homeowners on our website. No matter how you feel about the question, please vote on April 2nd. It's your opportunity to speak directly to the school district about taxes and funding programs. Thanks for listening. This has been the SMY Podcast, and we'll see you next time.